You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, October 8th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thank you for joining us here on this Thursday. We've got a lot of great content to bring to you over the next 2 hours. Thanks to all of our podcast listeners for joining us for the first hour. And if you'd like to get the second hour on demand, you can become a 420 Radio VIP. VIPs can log on to 420radio.org and access the Toker Talk Radio replays on demand. Coming up on today's show, it's Thursday, and every other Thursday we have a visitor from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition in our segment that we call Cops Say Legalize Drugs. Joining us today will be Brian Chapman. He's a former probation officer in Dallas County, Texas. He'll tell us all about his realization that the war on drugs is a failure and that we need to legalize all drugs in order to end this abomination. So he'll be coming up at 5:30. Stay tuned for that in Cops Say Legalize Drugs. Then at the end of the show, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're taking a look at the statistics on drug testing for welfare. We've got the latest numbers in from Tennessee. They're not much different from all the other states that have tried drug testing for welfare. We'll tell you why it's such a bad idea, not just for welfare, but for every job out there. That's coming up at the end of the show in the Radical Rant. Also on the show today, in drug war data mining, we've got a new poll coming out from Ohio on support for marijuana legalization, backed up by polls from Florida and Pennsylvania and nationwide polls that reveal one very difficult question, and that is, why do the polls always show greater support for legalization among men compared to women? There's always been a double-digit gap in support. We'll try to figure out why. Also on the show today, we'll take a look at some reefer madness that needs some debunking coming out of the Boston Globe as they are rocking toward not one but two initiatives fighting to get on the ballot for marijuana legalization. In a little reefer madness debunked segment I'm calling Nobody Said Marijuana Was Harmless. Get so tired of our opponents bringing that straw man up to fight. Also on the show today, we will have our 420 radio news, and coming up in the news, we've got the sales numbers from the first week of legal sales in the state of Oregon. We've got the numbers from that Ohio poll. We've got raids on illegal grows in Colorado, new rules for medical marijuana in Vermont, and a push for medical marijuana in the state of Missouri. Also want to let you know that this weekend, the 10th and 11th, I will be with Portland Normal at the Oregon Hemp Convention at the Portland Expo Center on Marine Drive. You can visit OregonHempConvention.com to learn more. I'll be delivering an address on Saturday, and I'll be moderating and then participating in two different panels on Sunday. Tickets are available online at the OregonHempConvention.com. That's OregonHempConvention.com. Tickets are just $10. Also, while we're out there at the Portland Expo Center, in another wing of the building, they're having the Oregon Tattoo Expo, or the Portland Tattoo Expo, I think it's called. And what do you know? Me with a big old tattoo on my back filled with hemp leaves. It's the perfect event for me. What do you know? We're back with the 420 Radio News right after this, and then stay tuned in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll get some great Groovin' Thursday Daily Toker Tunes for our 420 break. We'll take your calls toll-free at 84-420-RADIO, and we'll talk more about the marijuana news of the day. I'm Radical Russ. We're enjoying the strong silicone bong, and we'll be right back after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. You're listening to 420radio.org.
I know a thing or two about drug dealers. They'll sell anything, anywhere, to anyone. They don't check IDs. They don't care what's in the poison they push. They control the streets. Failing to reform marijuana laws means the drug dealers win. They stay in business, and we surrender our streets. It's time for responsible reform. To legalize, regulate, and control marijuana. So we're in charge, not the criminals. Vote yes on 3.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Replays of 420 Radio News are embeddable and shareable from our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Now, the marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 8th, 2015. After just 1 week of recreational marijuana sales, Oregon dispensaries have raked in an estimated $11 million. That figure could mean the state's estimate is shockingly low for how much money it'll make when pot taxes kick in this January. The Oregon Retail Cannabis Association estimated there were $3.5 million in sales on the first day, October 1st. 1 week in, Oregon is already far ahead of dollars spent on pot compared to Colorado's first week of legal recreational sales at $5 million. Washington took a month to sell its first $2 million, according to Marijuana Business Daily. When Oregon voters approved recreational marijuana, the state set an estimate of $9 million in tax revenue for the first full year of 2017. But the Oregon Retail Cannabis Association believes it'll bring in 3 to 4 times that much. In a new Quinnipiac University poll, 53% of Ohio voters support legalizing small amounts of marijuana for personal use, while 44% oppose it. That's largely unchanged from an April poll where 52% of Ohioans supported legalization and 44% opposed it. Support for medical marijuana increased from 84% in favor in April to 90% in favor in October. Quinnipiac did not ask voters specifically about Issue 3, but it is the only independent poll to publicly release responses from Ohioans on the topic of marijuana. Support for legalizing recreational use is highest among young voters aged 18 to 34, 70% in favor and 25% against. Legalization also has more support from men. 59% of men support it, while only 47% of women are in favor. Colorado and federal agents have raided illegal marijuana operations across the state the past 6 weeks in concerted efforts to take out syndicates marketing marijuana to different parts of the country. U.S. Attorney John Walsh's staff has filed numerous criminal charges in recent weeks against illegal operations that are secretly growing marijuana in Colorado for shipment across the country. Walsh speculated that the influx could be linked to the drought in California, where many illegal grow operations have been found previously. Local, state, and federal agents have arrested 34 people, most of them residents from outside Colorado, on illegal marijuana charges the past 6 weeks. Some of the offenders were citizens of Mexico, Honduras, and Cuba. About 20,000 marijuana plants were destroyed, as well as 300 kilograms of dried marijuana. In every case in which arrests were made, the marijuana grows were both illegal under federal law and unlicensed by the state. Delivery of medical marijuana and hemp grown by dispensaries were among the rules approved Thursday by the Vermont Legislative Committee on Administrative Rules. New this year are regulations that allow for the state's 4 dispensaries to grow hemp plants to be used for symptom relief. Hemp has a THC level of less than 0.3%, which is lower than cannabis. Also approved was the delivery of marijuana products to patients on the Vermont Marijuana Registry. Today's decision comes after nearly 3 months of discussions among the committee and the Department of Public Safety, which oversees the state's marijuana registry. Definitions have been clarified, including the meaning of cannabis and marijuana-related supplies, such as pipes and vaporizers, according to a copy of the proposed rules. The new regulations will also allow for dispensaries to assist more than one patient or caregiver at each time. With polls showing support for legal medical marijuana at nearly 80%, but support for recreational use below 50%, New Approach Missouri decided a new state initiative to legalize medical marijuana was the way forward, said Dan Vietz, a Columbia attorney and chairman of Show Me Cannabis, a group that also advocates for reforming marijuana laws. The group filed 2 versions of a medical marijuana initiative at the Secretary of State's office, both amending the state constitution to make access to legal marijuana a right. After a review period, signature gatherers will begin seeking more than 160,000 signatures to put it on the November 2016 ballot. The measure would allow doctors to issue certification to purchase medical marijuana to patients with cancer, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, and several other severe illnesses. The proposal would impose a 6% tax on medical marijuana sales in addition to the existing sales taxes. The new revenue would be dedicated to veterans' health care. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 8th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
What do you think about Issue 3?
It's a smart, safe plan. Like most states that legalize marijuana, it initially limits the number of growers for strict regulation before adding more. Plus, it puts drug dealers out of business. What about you?
Well, I like that Yes on 3 provides medical marijuana for those in need, and that might be me someday.
That's a regulated industry without creating a monopoly.
For medical marijuana, vote no on 2 and yes on 3.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Today on the Boston Globe's website, their number one trending article is entitled, "Can We Please Stop Pretending Marijuana is Harmless? The truth is, it can indeed mean trouble, especially for young people." It's authored by Dr. Sushrut Jangi, and like I said, it's the number one article trending right now on bostonglobe.com. And I got to start off with the premise of the headline. Who out here is pretending that marijuana is harmless? This is a straw man the opposition have been fighting for decades now. Nobody on our side that is legalizing marijuana says that marijuana is harmless. Is it less harmful than alcohol? Demonstrably so. Is it less harmful than tobacco? Absolutely, the numbers support that. In fact, harm for harm, marijuana may be as harmful as aspirin or caffeine or any number of things that are completely legal and that we trust responsible adults to be able to use safely. Things that maybe we don't trust kids to be able to use, and perhaps we put limitations on their ability to access it. But nevertheless, we accept that there are certain levels of risk, both mental and physical, that we are willing to accept. We accept it. This is okay in our society. Now, Dr. Jangi has all sorts of interesting things to say in the article, but by paragraph 3, I get a pretty good impression of where his information is coming from in this sentence. "The myth that marijuana is not habit-forming is constantly challenged by physicians. Quote, there's no question at all that marijuana is addictive, end quote, Dr. Sharon Levy tells me." Well, Dr. Sharon Levy is not only the director of the Adolescent Substance Abuse Program at Boston's Children's Hospital, which means her clients, about half of them, are being forced there when they get caught with weed. Not necessarily that they have a problem, but they get forced there as part of either their school catching them or their the court system catching them and sentencing them to a rehab they do not need. So understand that it's clouded by that. But also, Dr. Sharon Levy is one of the board members, one of the founding board members, by the way, of Project SAM, the Smart Approaches to Marijuana group founded by Kevin Sabet, with the explicit goal of not only stopping marijuana legalization, but stopping the advance of medical marijuana. Now, of course, Dr. Levy has a terrible, terrible sob story about an 18-year-old patient who started smoking marijuana several times a day in the 10th grade, dropped out of high school, and stole money from her parents. She and her family were at their wits' end trying to find an appropriate treatment in a healthcare system that doesn't consider addiction to marijuana a serious problem. We are simply not prepared for the fallout of marijuana legalization. Dr. Levy, the problem with this thinking is that somehow marijuana legalization invents marijuana. As if marijuana doesn't already exist and is extremely popular from the ages of 16 to 22. Since the 1970s, we've had the same sort of bell curve when you take a look at marijuana use, and it peaks ages 16 to 22. So this has already been going on. This has already existed. And when we look at the National Survey for Drug Use and Health, and we look at the Monitoring the Future survey, we find for the past 45 years, it has been easy or fairly easy for 81 to 90% of 12th graders to get their hands on marijuana. We have seen for the past 45 years, the reported rates of adolescent use rise and fall, maybe not necessarily so correlated with their actual use as correlated with their fear of answering honestly. But nevertheless, we've seen the rates rise and fall, but we haven't seen any corresponding dangers rise and fall with them. We didn't see traffic fatalities increase and decrease as marijuana use increased and decreased. We didn't see school dropouts correlate. We didn't see standardized test scores correlate with this. None of the predicted harms from the prohibitionists have ever correlated with the rising and falling marijuana use rates among youths and young adults for the past 45 years. So this scare that we're somehow legalizing marijuana and all of a sudden everybody's going to turn out to be massively addicted is just scares. That's all this is. Another doctor here talks about brain data and how the hazards are, how it can affect the brains of young people. And indeed, it probably can. It's probably not a good idea to become a wake and baker in your teenage years. But it's also not a good idea to be a cigarette smoker or a drinker in those years either. Those things are also illegal, and they also cause far more harms. What we're just asking is that we have a rational policy around marijuana that recognizes it's not harmless, it's just far less harmful.
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
All right, it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado, as well as the rest of the Mountain Time Zone, which might take a little longer to legalize than some of the other places in this country. Still got a lot of friends and family in deep red Idaho. And I understand that every state we legalize is one step closer to getting legalization in those states. This is a national fight, people.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is...
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
As a police officer, I walked a beat, served on the vice squad and SWAT team, and became an expert on drug addiction. I saw firsthand the effects of Ohio's destructive marijuana laws. Simply put, they don't work. Ohio spends over $100 million each year on this failed effort. It's time for marijuana reform, so law enforcement can spend their time cracking down on real criminals and making Ohio a safer place for our families. Vote yes on 3.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All sorts of interesting statistics coming at us in the Drug War Data Mines today. First of all, the Christian Science Monitor asks, why do men want to legalize pot more than women do? And this is something we've seen for years now in marijuana reform. The most recent Quinnipiac poll that we told you about in the news from Ohio shows a 59 to 47% gap between men and women. 12% or 12 point gap between men and women's support, where a majority, an overwhelming majority of men, 59% support this, but only 47% of women do. And we had a poll in Florida from September through the beginning of October that showed 57% of men approved legal marijuana compared to 46% of women, an 11-point gap. Nationwide, we see a similar gap. Pew Research Center found this spring that men's support nationwide, 57%, women's 49%. What are the reasons behind this massive gap? Well, for one, self-interest. Far more men smoke pot than do women. As you look at the demographic, well, and again, consider that we get this information from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, which is a anonymous pollster from the federal government calling you on the telephone at some random time and asking you questions about whether or not you break state and federal law. So take it with a grain of salt. Maybe men are just more honest when they talk to these pollsters. Maybe women facing more cultural pressures shade their answers a bit. So let's take that caveat as we get into these numbers, but understand that as we look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, you look at lifetime marijuana use, it's around 52-48 or 55-45. It's pretty close. More men than women, but pretty even on whether or not someone has ever tried pot in their life. But the more you go into the frequency scale, as you go from annual pot smokers to monthly pot smokers to daily pot smokers, at the daily end, you end up at a 68-32 ratio. 68% of the daily pot smokers are men, 32% are women. Over a 2-to-1 ratio. Two boys for every girl. So ladies, if you're looking for a fella, start smoking more pot. But that's what we find, and as it just gets worse and worse, the more frequency of marijuana smoking you look at, and it only makes sense then that men's support would be greater as their self-interest in legalizing would be greater. But I also think another effect of this is the cultural pressures on women and the typical stereotypes about what stoners are, you know, slackers, losers, and so forth, that perhaps women are under more cultural pressure to not be stoners in general. So there's also the pressure put upon women once they have children to be good moms, and good moms don't smoke pot, according to the cultural stereotypes. Those could all be reasons behind why men want to legalize pot more than women. Now, also in the Drug War Data Mines, I wanted to talk about an interesting study that came out on students at Oregon State University, just south of me in Corvallis, Oregon. This was published on September 28th in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs. And what they found is they recruited 284 18 to 22-year-old undergrads, 18 to 22-year-olds. And 61% were in a serious relationship, and they tracked them on their marijuana use, their alcohol use, their sex, and whether or not they used a condom. And they found something very interesting. One of these things would be, you know, like a no-duh moment, and that was, the study found once you controlled for who was in a relationship and what times of the week they'd have sex and so forth, once you controlled all the confounders they could figure, they found that there was greater sexual activity following alcohol drinking, and this was like binge alcohol drinking, like heavy alcohol drinking, or smoking marijuana. So indeed, smoking pot or drinking led to more sex. And I think this is from the Department of No Duh. Like, I think everybody could probably guess that would be the response from this survey. But what they also found is that the marijuana smokers, unlike the heavy drinkers, would continue to use condoms at the same rate. Drinkers would just go bareback and not even worry about it, but pot smokers tended to stay with the same rates of condom use as they had if they were sober. Now, the Register Guard, the paper down in Eugene, Oregon, likes to attribute this to the possibility that pot smokers are just a little more paranoid. The researchers wrote, decision-making impairments may be mild following marijuana use, and that cognitive compensation may occur. So, yeah, there may be something to the fact here that alcohol drinkers, as we've mentioned before on the show, not only do you become impaired in your body and mind, but you get impaired in your judgment, make riskier decisions. Marijuana use doesn't lead to that same impairment of judgment. And with some little bit of paranoia, could lead to a public health benefit, according to this. They found that there were decreases in the probability of having consumed alcohol in the past month, binge drinking, and the number of drinks consumed in states that have medical marijuana legalization. This was a trio of researchers from University of Oregon that found this. They theorized that marijuana may be a substitute for heavy drinking among this population. They also say there have been a decrease in traffic fatalities by 8 to 11% in 14 states in the year after those states legalized the use of medical marijuana. We're back with our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. Brian Chapman, a former probation officer from Texas, will be joining us. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
I remember the day Addison was born. She was just perfect. But then the seizures started, up to 1,000 a day from severe epilepsy. Nothing we tried or the doctors tried worked. So we moved our family from Ohio to Colorado to try medical marijuana. Now Addison only has a few seizures a day and she's a kid again. We want to move back to Ohio, but we can't because her medicine is illegal there. It's time for marijuana reform.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Today in our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, we go all the way down to the Lone Star State of Texas, where Brian Chapman joins us. He's a former probation officer from Dallas County, Texas. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Russ. Thanks for having me.
It's great reading your bio here, talking about being a probation officer, because the opening sentence talks about how you didn't want to tell people what you did for a living as a probation officer. Why was that?
Well, that was, that's correct. Well, basically, when I was a probation officer, if I was in Dallas, and if I was like in the inner city of Dallas or some different types of neighborhoods in Dallas, you know, just because of drug prohibition, it's created this distrust of law enforcement in a lot of these communities to the point where I didn't want to tell people that was a probation officer or a law enforcement or anything like that. And it's funny because if people would actually ask me what I did for a living, I'd just lie and just said, I'm just a car insurance salesman. So this drug prohibition, especially in our inner cities and a lot of other communities, it just creates this distrust of law enforcement that's really unhealthy. And it's bad for the citizens in the community. It's bad for law enforcement because it's difficult for the community to work with law enforcement and vice versa. And it just created a really awkward situation to the point where I would never let anyone know what I was a probation officer in law enforcement or anything like that.
What a shame. Now, as a probation officer in Dallas County, Texas, what was your workload like with respect to dealing with folks who had marijuana or drug convictions versus like real criminals, thieves and such?
Well, with the drug offenders, you know, it is always kind of it always felt like we're misusing our resources in law enforcement. You know, we'd have we just had some college age kid who just got busted with a little dime bag of marijuana or anything like that. Well, he gets on probation, and then, you know, we focus our time, you know, we make him go to drug treatment and things like that. The young man or young woman probably wouldn't need drug treatment. You know, they just got caught with a little bag of marijuana in their pocket or whatever. So now we spend a lot of time and effort and resources on the nonviolent drug offenders, while at the same time, the violent offenders, the ones that are in there for, you know, assaults, rape, those violent crimes, we're diverting resources away from that, and we're putting it into the nonviolent offenders. And it kind of just bothers you because you see the resources that's wasting on the nonviolent drug offenders that could have been used for the violent drug offenders that could have made a real difference in your community.
And in your bio also, it mentions the story of Billy, one of your probationers, I guess is what you mm-hmm. would call them, and how yeah. it's not even the hardened drug criminals that lose out. It's the folks that do have a substance abuse issue, right?
Absolutely. You know, what would happen, you know, like I talk about Billy, because he's just basically just your college age kid, things like that. Just got busted a little bit of marijuana, and he'd be court ordered to go to drug treatment. So you would sign him up for drug treatment. If he didn't have the money for drug treatment, you give him state-sponsored drug treatment classes and things like that. And what would end up doing is Billy would end up taking a spot. And Billy didn't really need the drug treatment. He's just a young kid. He just really didn't, just going through that phase pretty much. But the thing is that you took a spot away from the hard drug addict, someone that has like a heroin addiction, cocaine, one of those harder drugs, who actually wanted help and needed help, but he couldn't get the help because that spot went to someone else who either didn't need it or didn't want the drug treatment.
Yeah, such a shame. We're speaking with Brian Chapman, a former probation officer in Dallas County, Texas. He's a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can find them at leap.cc. They got speakers from all over the country and around the world. They'll come out and speak at your event and tell everybody the truth from their perspective, fighting on the front lines of this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Also in your probation history here, you talk about how the war on drugs has actually created the job opportunities that are lacking in many of these communities you were dealing with.
Yeah, I remember I had a couple of them. Someone that, came up from a low-income background or something like that, and they get caught in this drug trade, and just the amount of money, I mean, you're talking, because I would always be, as a probation officer, you're like, okay, well, now you got to stop doing that. You got to stop making $2,000-$3,000 a day on the street. Now you got to go work at McDonald's for minimum wage. After 40 hours a week, after taxes, you're going to bring home about $200 a week. Well, that drug dealer could go out on the street and make that in about 3 hours. So if you're trying to tell someone, quit your job, go do this, most of the time they usually didn't get a good response because it's hard to tell someone to quit what is a multi-billion dollar business, the drug industry, to go work at a minimum wage job. And it does, it does create a lot of job opportunities. The thing is, though, it gets a lot of our young kids involved because, especially if they come from low-income backgrounds, because they have just, the money is just so much and so easy for them to get, that it ends up creating a lot of the other problems, and they get started selling drugs, and they get you know, involved in the violence that goes along with the drug prohibition. So it ends up creating a lot of problems with our young people that wouldn't be there if, you know, we weren't having drug prohibition.
And then we have the other aspect of this. If you try to reach for something higher than a minimum wage job, there's that little checkbox that asks if you've been convicted of a drug crime, and you can't get that higher paying job.
That was always a problem. I had a lot of probation tell me that. They're like, yeah, I went to the interview. The interview went well, and then they didn't land my background check, and they never called me back.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing over and over again. And it was really sad because a lot of these probationers, I had a lot of probationers, just had just drug offenses. And that was just the only thing that stopped them from getting a legitimate job. And then you can see, okay, now they're going to be stuck in this cycle. Now they won't be able to find a job. Now how are you going to support themselves? Well, if they're going to go back to doing what they were doing. So it's just a continuous cycle. And it's just that this is one of those unintended consequences of drug prohibition that people don't realize, that you just create this continuous cycle. And it ends up, you know, one generation to another, just because that's just all that's offered to them.
Yeah, a creation of a permanent underclass in our society. Mm-hmm. Now, Brian, you're in Dallas County, Texas, and I recently saw some polling numbers that said there's been a great increase in support. Still not majority support, but like up from about a third to almost half of Texans that are now supporting the idea of legalization, and far fewer that thought we ought to be punishing people with jail, maybe fines, maybe probation, something like that, for their marijuana possession. Are Texans finally coming around on this issue?
I think a lot of them are starting to come around to it. I think it's slowly but surely. I think people are waking up to it. You know, I think people are starting to see the harms of drug prohibition. Like I always tell people, substance abuse and drug prohibition, they're two separate issues. You see substance abuse issues, but now I think people are starting to realize there's a lot of issues with drug prohibition, the crime, the violence, all those issues are separate from substance abuse. So I think people slowly but surely are kind of grasping that concept and getting that idea that, hey, drug prohibition is causing these other problems. If you have a regulated, controlled market, you can control distribution points, you can control who you sell it to, you can have check IDs like you do with alcohol and tobacco. And that's just what I think people are starting to realize, that we could treat these drugs like alcohol and tobacco, and then we can, you know, just, you know, they'll take care of all the other negative aspects of drug prohibition.
And I got to imagine that the experience of four other states now having legalized marijuana and they weren't engulfed in flames and, you know, overrun by zombies or anything, has got to be changing some people's minds.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, people see, you know, this, you know, there's a couple different aspects. You can see the crime dropping, the drug use actually dropping, you know, having control over the illegal substance now. And, you know, a lot of, you know, if you're a politician, you can see all the tax money that those states are making. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, now I can go fund this project that I want to propose for. So, you know, there's all these other really positive aspects. And I think as states continue to do that and they see the positive part of legalizing control and legalization of these marijuana and these drugs, I think it'll start to have a ripple effect throughout the country. As soon as these little social experiments in these states are legalized, and as soon as you see the good results, I think a lot of other states are going to start catching on.
There were times I didn't tell people what I did for a living due to the distrust in law enforcement officers. You mentioned that about your probation officer career. Now that you're a speaker for LEAP, is it easier to tell people what you do?
Well, yeah. I'm a manager for a commodities company in Dallas now. So now I can do that for a living. But it's always interesting to bring it up now, because now I tell them, when I'm a former probation officer, one of the things I tell them now, I'm like, I'm now in favor of legalizing all drugs, and I tell them that, and they tend to look at me weird for a second, and
sure.
Then I explain it, and I explain LEAP a little bit, and it's always great, because no matter who I tell that to, by the time I'm done talking to them, they're like, I agree with you.
That's got to be a good feeling.
It is.
Now, Brian, you bring up that you're working for this commodities group, and it's interesting to me now, you know, a lot of people have been yoked, let's say, on their expression of support for marijuana legalization by their companies that fear the backlash or the negative PR. That doesn't seem to be the case with your company.
Actually, no. It's funny. We're actually talking to them about this. We started about 3-4 weeks ago. They were just we're just all talking, you know, we're just having a little, basically like a little happy hour. You know, we're all just sitting there just kind of talking to each other, and they just, because a lot of people like to talk about my previous job as a probation officer because it's a really interesting job. Mm-hmm. So I started talking to them about that, and I started telling them, actually, after that job, I told them, actually, I'm in favor of legalizing all drugs, and they just, and actually, quite a few of my coworkers actually agreed with me, and I said, actually, I'm actually now a member of LEAP, and I'm a speaker for a group called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I started giving out my business cards. I was like, y'all should just check us out sometime. As more I started talking to them, we just started discussing it. Everyone in the company started to agree with me.
So that's amazing. Now, is it harder? Is it harder to get them to make the leap, pardon the pun, from marijuana legalization to all other drugs?
Well, I mean, when it comes to the other drugs, I always tell them, you know, with the other drugs, especially in the harder drugs, I tell them, like, I know I had this problem when I actually was a probation officer. I had a client. He had a lot of medical conditions, and he used to take, I think it's called the Dixoxin.
Suboxone?
It's basically legal meth.
Yeah.
And he would tell me, I got caught because he told me he lost his job, he lost his insurance. And because when he lost his insurance, he was able to look at that drug. And when he says, well, I don't have that drug, my body just shuts down. I can't move, I can't do anything. And so what he started to do was taking the illegal stuff. He just said, I just had to get on it just so I could just propping myself up, because otherwise I'm just dead. And he was just telling me about that, and I was like, because when it comes to these harder drugs, you know, especially like, I know meth, cocaine, all these other ones, you know, it's the same concept with marijuana or any illegal drugs. You make it illegal, you're gonna have these problems with it. But he was telling me, you know, just for medical purposes, he's telling me about, you know, his issue with meth, and I was just like, well, maybe we should treat meth like we would treat alcohol and tobacco, because it seems to be have a medical use. You know, if you just make it into a pill right now for medical use, but there seems to be some medical use out of this too that, you know, that we could probably explore some more as well.
Glad to hear that from you. Thank you so much for your work as a probation officer. It's oftentimes a thankless job. And now you're speaking for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Find them at leap.cc. If you're in the Dallas County, Texas area, maybe Brian Chapman will be a speaker who comes out for you. Brian, thanks for joining us on the show, and good luck in your future endeavors.
Well, thank you, Russ. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, stay tuned, folks. We'll have time for a radical rant at the end of the show following our anti-drug public service announcement of the day. We're going to talk about the states that continue this stupid drug testing for welfare policy. It has nothing to do with catching people on drugs and everything to do with shaming poor people. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Yeah. Can't beat me, man. Yo, Quincy.
Number two. What's up, man?
Why don't you bring out that weed, man?
It's gone.
What?
If you know your kid has been smoking pot, find a way to take action. Get tough, get creative, just get through.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
You're tuned in to 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. I've been covering this story of drug testing for welfare for quite a bit, ever since Florida, I think it was back in 2011, was it? 2011, they started this whole drug testing for welfare thing, and it was found to be unconstitutional because Florida was drug testing everybody for welfare. Like, anybody that wanted to apply for welfare, we drug tested you. The courts said, no, that's, you got no probable cause there. You got no reason to randomly, that's just a random search and seizure. And even though people are poor, believe it or not, they still have Fourth Amendment protections. So recently, the states that have been doing drug testing for welfare have found their little end run around the Constitution by issuing a questionnaire for people that want to apply for welfare. The questionnaire asks them a few questions about drug use and knowledge of drugs. Based on the answers of those questionnaires, that then provides the cause necessary to be able to test people for drugs as they're applying for welfare. That gets around the whole constitutional issue because now you've got a reason. You've got a reasonable suspicion rather than just randomly testing everybody. So Tennessee just had their welfare drug testing program come in this summer, and the data are in after 1 year of drug testing for welfare. So what happened is they had 28,559 Tennesseans who were applying for their version of TANF, which is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. In Tennessee, it's called Families First. So 28,559 people applying for welfare. Of that number, 468 were tested for drugs. That is, 468 of them failed the quiz. Now, first of all, I haven't seen the quiz. I don't know what the quiz is. I can imagine what the quiz is. Probably asks you questions about, you know, if you know what it, do you know what an eight ball is? Or have you ever used drugs? And sometimes also it's not just a questionnaire. They check your background. I think Utah was the one that was doing this where they actually do a background check. If you got a prior drug conviction, that's enough reasonable suspicion to drug test you. So out of the 28,559, 468 of them failed the quiz and therefore were subjected to a drug test. So right off the bat, you're dealing with 1.6% of all the people that applied for welfare showing any sort of probable cause to test them for drugs. Now, that's not to say there were only 468 of them that there might be reason to drug test. That's just saying there's only 468 of them that were dumb enough to answer honestly on this quiz enough to be subject to a drug test. Regardless, we're talking 1.6% of all applicants. So if the goal of this is, doggone it, we got to make sure we're not subsidizing druggies by giving them welfare money, because that's always the justification. Taxpayer dollars shouldn't subsidize somebody buying a joint. Oh, sure, they might buy some beer. They might buy a pack of smokes. They might buy some Pringles. But we got to draw the line at the weed. So if your goal was to stop that, already it's a failure because you only got 1.6% of the people that are applying. We know from surveys, federal surveys, that even in the state of Tennessee, more than 1.6% of the people are using drugs. So there must be some of those 28,559 who are spending their welfare money on drugs. You didn't catch them. Now, we should, though, point out that when we do surveys and testing and figure out all the data based on income, lower income people use drugs at a lower rate than middle and higher income people. It's not too hard to figure out. Drugs cost money, right? Who's going to be able to blow $40 on a bag of weed when they need to buy diapers for their kid? And that's always what's, you know, oh, they'll be so addicted, the kids will suffer and they won't feed them and they'll let them run without. No, that's not what happens. Most people are pretty responsible when it comes to their drug use. Regardless, there's a lower rate of drug use among lower income people, but even that lower rate is greater than the 1.6% that they actually caught. Now, when I say they actually caught, I actually mean that they tested 468 that failed the quiz. So there were 468 people who failed this quiz, giving the government of Tennessee the reasonable suspicion that they might be druggies. And when they actually tested them, 55 tested positive. So out of the 468, that's 11.75%, about 12%, about 1 out of 8. A little less than 1 out of 8. Of the ones that failed the quiz, right? You do that division of 55 of them versus the 28,559 that actually applied, and we are now down to 0.2%. 0.2%. 1 out of what? 500? Is that what that is? 1 divided by 500. Yeah. A little less than 0.2%. A little less than 1 out of 500 people that applied, you actually caught with a drug test. Now, you got to figure, these drug tests cost money, right? Stuff ain't free. So, issuing 468 drug tests. And the what these drug tests cost can vary from place to place. Let's say it's $49. It's about a standard. Some places $20-$30, some places $60-$70. Let's just peg it in the middle, say $49. So for those 468 drug tests, that's the state of Tennessee spending $22,932. For spending that $22,000, almost $23,000, they nabbed 55. So it cost them $416.94 per positive drug test. If a drug test costs close to $50. So the people of Tennessee are seeing their tax money being wasted to fail in any sort of way to actually accomplish what the goal of the drug testing was, which is to ensure that taxpayer money wasn't wasted. Well, taxpayer money just got wasted. And when you figure out what it would cost in the lost benefits to the 55 who tested positive, it doesn't begin to match the money that was spent to try to root them out. Once you figure out the cost of the drug test for the 468 that took the test and the cost of administering the 28,559 questionnaires, somebody's got to check that stuff. That paper's got to be printed too. Everywhere it has been done, drug testing for welfare has received the same results that show the drug rate, positive rate among those get tested is far below the general public. General public can be anywhere from 6 to 8%. You get with the states that have drug tested for welfare, they're showing about 1-2% positive rates. Every state that's tried it has spent more money in trying to do it than the money they saved by doing it. It is not a cost-effective program. It does nothing to prevent taxpayer money from being spent on drugs. But then you got to look deeper and recognize that this really isn't anything to do with saving taxpayer money or stopping poor people from using drugs. This all has to do with grandstanding by politicians who want to show how tough on drugs they are, how tough they are on the takers, on the welfare cheats, to try to burnish up some credentials there for the next election. This is nothing more than a dog and pony show every time it's run, and the people that suffer are poor people, and more explicitly, the children of poor people. And I take this personally because I was one of those children of poor people. My dad was a raging alcoholic. And no drug test for welfare would have ever stopped catching his alcoholism, because for some reason the drug testing for welfare doesn't include alcohol. By doing this, can they not see how we incentivize poor people to want to drink more? They don't understand that being poor, just the state of poverty, is incredibly stressful on a human being. It's a stressful life being poor. And people will naturally turn to a stress reliever. But poor people don't have the doctor they can go to get the Valium prescription or the Xanax prescription. Poor people got beer, weed, and drugs. That's the choices when you're poor. So we incentivize the people who need that stress relief from moving away from the safer, non-toxic marijuana that actually has some medical benefit for them and could actually help them in situations where they need pain relievers or insomnia relief or appetite or whatever you might need. We incentivize them away from that and onto alcohol or other drugs that dissipate much more quickly in the system and won't fail you on the drug test. And worse of all, we incentivize these people to use the synthetic marijuana that doesn't show up on the test and yet is so much more dangerous and harmful. That's all the time we got for our podcast hour. Thanks for joining us. Live listeners, stay tuned for hour two. Toker Talk Radio is up next. I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrus.com. You take a seat, you're planning, you're growing, you're dying, you're